You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Views expressed on this program are the responsibility of those who make them. They do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates.
Hi, folks. Welcome to the show, whoever you are and wherever you happen to be all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. And those of you who are joining us for the very first time tonight, welcome. We're glad to have you. I'm delighted you're here. You don't know, so let me tell you that there are a couple of pretty cool things, actually quite a number of pretty cool things over at our website. So just go over to kevinsmithshow.com, and one of the things you'll find there is a link where you can subscribe to our free weekly newsletter. All right, it's called the K-Files E-Zine. You'll see it in red. Just click that, and in about 10 seconds or less, you can subscribe. And let me say a couple of things, though. If you have one of those filters, you know, on your email that says, well, I have to click this link, and then you'll start accepting the email from our address. If you have one of those are good. But you see, our emailing list is gigantic, and so it gets sent out automatically. It's an automated thing, and so there's no one to click that link. All right? So use an email address that doesn't have that. All right? Now, you have no doubt been following the news, and we've talked about it here on this show, about the UFO sighting, the very large UFO sighting in Stephenville, Texas. Well, that is really making the news. It's buzzing, and lots of folks are talking about it. I talked about it a little bit last night. I told you the statement from one person in the Air Force. I can't remember his full name, and I can't remember his rank. Last name is Lewis. And he said, well, this is an illusion that it could be an illusion caused by a couple of commercial airliners. And I just laughed at that when I told you about it last night, and I'm fighting off laughing at it now. It's just preposterous. I mean, it takes way, way, way more mental convolution to believe that than just for us to say, well, it was something. It was large. It was silent. And people that saw it have no idea what it was. And so I think it's just better for us to just go with what we know, and what we know is that. It was large, and it was a whole lot bigger and quieter and than any airline people had ever seen. Had no noise. And it was flying low and fast, and according to witnesses, had Air Force jets chasing it. We'll just have to see where that story goes. I don't know where that story will go, but it's an amazing sighting. And one that we'll try to follow and keep you updated on. Now, if you haven't yet looked at the video from Google News, a video of something on Google News. If you haven't yet looked at that, you need to do so. All right, and it's on my website. right next to Jeff Harvey's picture. Take a look at it, because that's what we're going to talk about tonight. We'll be back right after this. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to alienseekernews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. Okay, folks, this is what you've been waiting for, your vacation of a lifetime. It awaits your arrival down under in beautiful and historic Hobart, Tasmania. And to make sure your holiday really is a dream come true, you'll be staying at the Bath Street Apartments. Here are just a few of the things that you'll enjoy in your home for the holidays. Stunning water and mountain views from all windows and from your own private balcony or veranda. Modern furnishings, a full modern kitchen with all new appliances, oven and hot plates, fat-free grill, full-size refrigerator, large-capacity microwave oven, cappuccino machine, dishwasher, and enough crockery, cutlery, and utensils to satisfy anyone's culinary desires. The lounge room has an extensive range of electronic home entertainment equipment, including, now get this, a big-screen TV, free digital satellite, pay TV on Foxtel AllStar with over 60 channels, DVD, video, wireless broadband connection, free local telephone calls from the in-room telephone with your own private telephone number so loved ones and friends can call you directly. The bathroom? Wow, the bathroom has a large spa bath, separate shower cubicle, ceiling-mounted heat lamp and fan and hair dryer, and it just gets better and better. Folks, you've got to see Bath Street Apartments, so click the banner over on the Kevin Smith Show website, or just go to bathstreetapartments.com.au. Your dreams are awaiting your arrival. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
Kevin Smith here. Do you have your Kevin Smith Show t-shirt yet? No? Well, let today be the day you step into the world of galactic fashion. Visit the Kevin Smith Show online store and get yours today.
All right, my guest this evening is Jeff Harvey. He's been with us before, recently, as a matter of fact. And we have him back for a different purpose tonight. Now, Jeff Harvey is an electronics expert, and he is also a remote viewer. He works with a team of remote viewers around the world. And you may be asking yourself at this point, so okay, what are we going to talk about, remote viewing? Well, yes, in a way, but more specifically this. Several months ago, I began receiving emails with links And these from different people around the world, all of them, the links had to do with something strange that had been found using Google Earth. You've all heard the stories about how the ice is melting in the Arctic region. It's melting a lot faster than they thought it would, significantly faster. Someone using Google Earth was looking at Greenland and discovered that as the ice has receded, there's something showing that is definitely anomalous. It's something very gigantic and doesn't look like geography. It looks like something that was constructed, and it's huge. Well, I didn't do anything with that information. I may have mentioned it, but I really didn't do anything with it because I really didn't have enough information to say anything about it other than, well, yep, there it is. So I really, you know, there wasn't much I could say about it. Well, I shared that information with, I have to tell you, I got a phone call from someone that I have not gotten his permission to use his name, but he's been a guest on this show, and he told me that he had received information about this object and that his information was from very high sources, and he told me some things about it. Well, I then shared that with Jeff Harvey and asked him if he would be interested in taking a look at this through remote viewing. Jeff, welcome back to the show. We're glad to have you.
Hi, Kevin. It's my pleasure.
You looked at the video link that I sent you, and as you looked at it, what did you think, what was your first impression of what you saw visually?
Visually, my thought was is that the elongated, suppose you could call it a structure, but I'm not convinced it's anything more than a covering for what's beneath of it. So when you look at it through Google Earth, it has an orange patina to it. It almost looks like a cloth-like covering, but it looks to me a little bit like something was placed there so that people could not physically view what was underneath of it. At the Greenland site. So that was my initial impression. I'm certain that a lot of times when there's something that does, that has either a national security element to it, or perhaps someone simply doesn't want someone with peering eyes to do it, if they're highly enough placed, they can get folks like the Google group to allow them to place a covering over a particular spot on the Earth. And you'll see them at various installations that are top secret and above. And so that's what this gave me the impression of initially.
I read an article on a website where that was pretty much the impression, that pretty much what was said on the other website, that the person who wrote the article said that, you know, it appears there's something they don't want us to see. All right, so when I talked with you on the telephone about this, I gave you the link. I talked with you briefly about, you know, that this thing was approximately 50 miles long and several miles wide and certainly doesn't look like it belongs in Greenland. And then you ask your remote viewers on your team to take a look at this. So why don't you pick it up from there and tell us kind of what has happened?
Certainly. What's interesting is that regardless of what anybody does to adjust the software so you cannot see an object below, the beauty of remote viewing is we can go right through that without ever having to even consider that covering and see exactly what's below that. Because if you take a look at basically, remote viewing does something that's interesting. The physicists have proven that every particle in the universe is connected to every other particle instantaneously, not at the speed of light, but instantaneously. And your autonomic nervous system is nothing more than an antenna for this particular signal line, or field, as some people call it. They've called it the matrix, the field, the Akashic record. Many different terms have been used for it. But basically what happens with anyone, if you happen to have some degree of intuition, let's say you have an intuition that something's going to happen and you're right. All that is just your body's, your autonomic nervous system coupled with your mind. It goes out and searches through that field looking for interesting information. It grabs onto it. It bubbles up through your preconscious processing as archetype symbols. Circles would be life forms or things that are round. Pointed things could be mountain tops or ranges, tops of other things that are peaked. Angular things at right angles are typically man-made structures. There are a few in nature that are similar, like precipices and crags. Wavy lines are typically moisture, sand, water, things of that nature. Flat lines being surfaces or land, things of that nature. But what happens is your unconscious mind will take a look at those archetypes, search your long-term memory, and see exactly what it might be, or the closest thing to it. And then it will simply bubble that up through your conscious mind as an idea or a concept or information. And what happens then is you get to take a look at it. So this is all very basic information on how remote viewing works. So what we can do is we can simply task our mind to go out and go find that information. And what it will do is it'll go shoot right through somebody's tent, their building, whatever we need it to do, and it'll go right down to where that piece of information is and pull it for us. And that's something that really makes a difference. And that's why they can't hide a lot, and that's why a lot of people would prefer that remote viewing is not trained. So right, when we first...
Yeah, so you had your team to take a look at this, and in fact you had them do it twice. Why was that?
Well, the first time we did that, we took the latitude and longitude that was up on the site, and we made that part of the initial cue. And we got results that showed some common elements, but I wasn't convinced that those exact coordinates were what we were looking for. Because if you think about it, if you're trying to hide something, you would not put the lat long up there for it, knowing full well that folks with remote viewing talents could look right down on that and tell exactly what's at that spot. So I decided to make a more generalized cue that would take into account that whole area. So that's what we did the second time, using target reference material, which is basically a Google Earth shot of that area, and we made that whole area the target. And that way, unconscious mind goes to that site, and it searches the site out for the information, and you will typically get the most unusual or most interesting components of the entire site. And that's what we did this time, and this time it rendered several interesting sessions. We had some very talented folks that were doing this. Rick Hilliard out in Australia, we had Jason Weber on it, Kathy Brown, and someone who you and I both know who is getting to be a very good viewer, Walter Bosley. So he, as well as the others, and also Mark Francisco, a new viewer, took a look at this, and I've been going over some of the data, and a lot of it correlates to the initial session, but there's some new information that came up that appears to be correlating in a rather interesting fashion, and I'll go over that with you. In a remote viewing session, when we first task the target reference numbers for that cue, your mind will basically connect to the autonomic nervous system, and you get basically a twitch with your hand. And with your pen on the paper, it becomes an ideogram, something that Ward Collier went over many years ago. And this ideogram gives you a shot of the site in a very small pattern that's a gestalt of the entire site. And basically what happened was is we got four circular looping ideograms that agreed with each other.
What would that indicate?
Well, it indicates a high degree of corroborating information between each of the sessions. And as you know, remote viewing is about 80% accurate when one remote viewer does it. But when you have a team doing it, and these folks, most of them, are running their own teams. These aren't folks that are just starting out in it. Rick has probably 1,000 or more sessions under his belt. Jason's coming up fast, and Kathy Brown as well. Me, I'm probably the least of all of them. I'm just reasonably good at going through and identifying things that match. So I took a look at this, and basically the S3 of the site, we took a look at it, and there were some very common elements there. We had five pointed archetypes in there, which pointed archetypes typically are going to be mountain ranges, mountain peaks, things like that, in a setting of this nature. And that was rather interesting. And the X, we had four that had a circular component to them. So that was quite a bit of corroborating information. And when we did it the last time, we only had two. So this time it appears we had a much higher degree of accuracy because we used the target reference material. So the X happens to be the label we put on whatever the target really is. And there were basically five convex components, I noticed. Three with motion that was similar, some of it counterclockwise. Then I went to the site template, which is where you put together all of the images that you've drawn in the sessions. And I took a look at those, and that's really your answer to what the issue is. And what we found was corroborating information that at the site there were fissures and lesions that were common elements, and they showed up on the landscape.
So you mean like cracks in the ground?
Right, and on the side of the mountain, that one of the peaks that was shown. So we also took a look, and there was digging, shaving, and scraping that was in common. Then there seemed to be an underground component, which was very interesting. And it appeared to be a pathway, and there appeared to be a structure that was concave in shape that wound back and forth down lower and lower levels. And in that, it appeared that it had a loping or a bouncing or a rambling component to it where it was climbing its way underground. And that was very interesting, taking a look at that, because we also found some interesting things on one of them, and I'm going to go over some of the notable items. One was blades. So the scraping, the digging, obviously there are some connections there. Very busy commotion. And we had two words that came up that were interesting. One was noisome, which is noxious or disgusting, and that may just have to do with air quality underground. And then Pantheon, which is a domed circular temple-like structure. And if you look at the site templates that were drawn, three of them had that sort of a domed look on the top. And so that was rather interesting. So those are some of the things that we located on this. Now, there's a little bit more work that needs to be done. We probably should run some add-on sessions to take a look at some of the components of these to see what they are, because it's, from what I've seen, it looks like there's some sort of, I would say, a construction-like activity going on there. What it's for, we don't have the purpose yet. That's going to take follow-on sessions for the project. So the purpose of those things would be the next things we would look at. But clearly there's something going on, and there is a reasonably high degree of activity on the site.
So your first impression that you shared with us was that when you saw the video, was that looks like someone has covered something up that they don't want us to see. They don't want us to see what's under there. Do you still, does this confirm that impression?
It does. It does. Because if you take a look at all of these sites and you look at some of the elements, I see camouflage in more than one, a gripping fog-like covering. And if you take a look at the actual site from Google Earth, there seems to be a fog that lives there almost. It normally you would think with a reasonably high level of wind, that fog would lift or move on a regular basis and be regenerated. However, I've yet to see it change. And so that actually has been corroborated by some of the evidence because it shows it as a gripping fog, which I thought was rather interesting.
Now, just to clarify for the audience, I shared with you the Google video, or the video made from Google Earth, but you did not share that with them, with your remote viewers. They had not seen it. They had no idea. Is that correct?
Initially, no. That's correct. And so what we do after the end of a session is we give them immediate feedback. And the reason why we do that is because after they've completed their session, the sooner you give feedback on what's going on at the site, what happens is your brain forms new cognitrons, which are pathways that teach it how to better do this session the next time through. So immediately after a session, you'll give them feedback, and what that does is it helps us get better and better at what we do. So that's what we do now. So now that the sheet has come away, the curtain's been opened, and we see the Wizard of Oz here, basically now what we're going to do is take a look at these, decide on what elements in each session we want to look at. Then we will do an additional session, knowing exactly what we've looked at now, and see what the elements inside of it are and what their purpose is. And those will be front-loaded sessions, meaning now they know what the target looks like, they know what the site looks like, but they now want to find out about the elements they drew and get more detailed information. And you can keep drilling down until you find the ultimate purpose, what's going on, and that's a great way to get a little bit closer to what the truth is about what's being hidden out there.
All right. We've got about 2 minutes until break, and let me ask you this. This pantheon, or this domed structure, is that subterranean, or is that out on the surface?
That appears to be on the surface. And what it may be, it could be nothing more than a tent structure over top, or it could actually be a physical structure. We didn't go far enough. We did get tent on one of these sessions, and on several of them, it looked like there was a vast overarching structure over top. So we have corroborating evidence there on each of those, so it looks like there's something to that. So that would be one of the elements we would take a look at to see what it really is.
When you do this, after the session is over, does your mind make any leaps? Does it say, well, you know, that looks like this?
Well, that's part of what we do at the end. At the end, we typically will do a summary after we've had a little break from the session, and we haven't had enough time to do that. But normally what we would do is a summary that would go over the site template, looking at it, and we would come up with a summary that says, okay, these are the facts at the site, with the things we know that we've seen here. Then what we would do is at the end of that, we would then make some educated guesses based on the information we have on what it is. And, of course, there are a whole lot of things you could say. You could say it's a tent. You could say it's a domed structure. You could say that It's a dome-shaped cloud over top of it. You know, there are a lot of things it could be. What it actually is would be another story. So that's why you do follow-on sessions, to actually further identify some of the component elements in these sessions that are the same.
All right, we have to take a break. And when we come back, more with Jeff Harvey and this weird thing in Greenland. Welcome back. We're talking with Jeff Harvey, and we're talking about this weird thing that is apparently in Greenland.
And I use the word apparently in Greenland because we really don't know what it is at this point, but there's something that shows up on Google Earth. Now, Jeff, this thing, as it's measured, when you look at it on Google Earth and you measure it according to their scale, it comes out to be almost 50 miles long. Now, that is big. And I forget how, 12 miles wide or something like that. It's big. And it would seem to me that it would be very, very difficult, if not impossible, to put a canvas covering or a camouflage covering over something 50 miles long. I maybe they can, I don't know, but it would seem to me to be an impossibility.
Well, if you look at that Google Earth shot, that may just be nothing more than something that they put into the software to cover the site. And they may have made it that large because they want to disguise how big whatever is down there really is and exactly where it is within that 50 or so mile stretch. So that's probably nothing more than a software overlay so that you can't see down below that. Now, having said that, that means that anywhere along that stretch could be what we're looking for. And as I look at the session data, if we have an underground component to this, with what appears to be some sort of a enclosed walkway or something like that, that would suggest that most of the activity is probably going on beneath the surface. And if that's the case, there are a lot of things that could be the issue. As Walter Bosley can tell you, Greenland has been identified as a site where there is a very, very ancient civilization here on the planet many, many, many years ago. And if that's the case, what this digging and scraping could be is someone's attempt to unearth it and determine what's down there. Now, why they would cover and hide that, that's a whole nother ball of wax. Now, if you think about this, we've been doing this now for about a decade or two. Well, a lot longer than that, but there's been a lot of research into these ancient civilizations that have been here on the planet. And there's a theory that what some organizations are attempting to do is to find some of the ancient technologies that were very, very advanced that were here back in those. So it would make sense that if they found an extremely old one and they're unearthing it, they're looking for ancient technologies. So that could explain that. We don't know that for a fact because we haven't gone through and done the follow-on sessions yet. But once we do those, if it turns out that we are dealing with an underground component where there is some sort of excavating going on, we should be able to find out what the purpose is without any trouble at all.
In this, in these sessions that you did, was there any indication of anything extraterrestrial involved?
Well, that's the hard part. We have not looked for that because we try not to front-load people when we're doing these sessions to find out what the real truth is. And so all of the items that we have here, as I look across the different sessions, I don't see anything that specifically points to it, but I don't see anything that excludes it either, which is rather interesting. There are some components on some of these sessions that point to a possibility of that, but I'm not going to commit to it until I get more data from some more follow-on sessions.
There, of course, anytime any new anomaly is discovered and it begins to make its way out across the internet, it snowballs because it picks up little additions to its story and then full-blown rumors and so forth. And, you know, and the truth is you could put a story out on the internet, find an anomaly, let it snowball, and then you, if you knew the full real story, you could put that out, and it would just be one of the stories in the mix, and nobody would know.
Exactly. Disinformation is probably one of the biggest games out there today.
Well,
there's so little information we get through the media that has a reasonable level of truth to it. It's amazing.
Oh, yes, that's true. I can remember seeing a reporter who claimed to be reporting from a city I was sitting in. And when you know, you got to the end of the report and he said his name and said his news agency. Then the camera pulled back from him and we could see his surroundings, and I knew exactly where he was because I've been there many times. He was standing in front of a hotel in the capital city of another country. And he was supposed to be, claimed to be reporting from where I was living. So yeah, I've seen that happen. And I think it's generally accepted. I think most people in America generally accept that if something is reported in the news and you divide it by 10, you might get down close to a kernel of truth. And I'm speculating at this point, because see, there's a lot of stories about this anomaly. And of course, a lot of them have to do with that there is an extraterrestrial component. All right, so and that what's under that covering or what that object is extraterrestrial in nature. That's a lot of the stories that are out there have to do with that. All right, so what I'm wondering at this point is if the real story is out there. In the mix.
And, entirely.
Yeah.
When I was out at sea on an aircraft carrier when I worked in military intelligence, just as a low-level tech, what we did was we started intercepting some of the transmissions that were coming back from reporters overseas. And we would get their exact transcript of what they were sending in for a story. Then within a day or two afterwards, when it actually aired, it would be entirely different than the reporter had written, and it had a spin on it that was what they wanted to make it out to be. So that was about the time we realized that the news is really not the news, it's whatever they want you to think. So I think the most intelligent people out there typically never watch television to get their news. It's probably the worst disinformation outlet there is on the planet. So if you're going to get news, then you're basically tasked with having to go to the internet, find some more credible sources, tap into them, research them, and verify them on your own. Which most people in our country are a little too lazy to actually do. There are some people out there that do, and those are typically the people that find out what's really going on.
But it's not an easy task, and it is time-consuming. And I think, you know, lots of people just simply don't have the time to do that. One of the things that I hope this show does is give people the opportunity. It sort of collapses time for us and gives us the opportunity to call in and ask questions of the guest who's presenting information. And hopefully that helps us understand, you know, more of what's real and what's not, and, you know, and decide for ourselves. But, it, you know, this show by itself can't do it all. And so people still need to get out there on the internet and find sources and read and then compare that to the few things that you can nail down and know are facts. And it is time consuming. Now, is it your impression that this site, you know, we're talking about this thing that we see in the video that's 50 miles long, is it your impression that the real deal, whatever it is not 50 miles long?
I'm convinced of that. And I'll tell you the reason why. When we did the first session, we used a lat long, and we had some interesting information. There were some elements that pointed to an extraterrestrial element. But this session, we seem to have gotten different information, but of course it's a different cue. We didn't point to one specific lat long to take a look at what was there.
Now, when you say lat long, you mean latitude, longitude?
Correct.
Yeah.
And so this session had a much wider purview, and yeah, it was a little more vague, but it also gave us the ability to look at the entire stretch of 50 miles and say, okay, what's underneath here? What are we really looking for here? What it seems to be the defining site, person, place, or thing that we're attempting to get the information on. And that's why when you look at these sessions, you take a look at it and you pretty much have to conclude that there is an underground component, there is structure there, and there is definitely a lot of activity. So now it will be, let's find out what it is, what its purpose is, and that should help us a lot. When I saw something 50 miles long, my first thought was, well, okay, what's 50 miles long or would need to be 50 miles long?
And I tell you what, we have to take a break. We'll find out about that 50 miles long in just a moment. All right, folks, more with Jeff Harvey on the other side of this break. Did you know the Kevin Smith Show selects one of its very best shows each week and turns it into a free podcast? Well, it's true. You can download free Kevin Smith Show podcast right now and get a free fresh podcast each week. Do you want to start building your own library of Kevin Smith shows? All you have to do is visit our website at kevinsmithshow.com and click the free podcast link. They're yours for the download. We are back, and we are talking with Jeff Harvey. And, Jeff, we had to cut you off in midstream. You were talking about what could require 50 miles.
Well, one of the things that I was thinking about as I was analyzing some of the data, initially we had quite a few circular items in that area, shaded, covered, things of that nature, convex, round, and circular. So as I look at the initial sessions, there were certainly quite a few things that match this follow-on session that we did. And so the EI suggested another life form other than the ones that the remote viewers. And it appeared that there seemed to be some kind of a looping energy that was being deployed at the site. So,
what does that mean, looping energy?
Well, I don't know the answer to your question. It just means energy in a looping pattern. Now, toroidal cores can generate things like that, and toroidal cores have been pointed to things like zero-point energy. They basically will form a cone at the top and a cone at the bottom, and the way they're wound, they have a tendency to create looping energy because they're basically a toroid shape in the first place. Now, we also had some interesting things that came out, like place, hole, opening, and safety on the original sessions that were done last week that you and I talked about. So there are some interesting elements, but let's take a look at the analysis. You've got a 50-mile-wide patch that seems to be covered with something so you can't see beneath it. So we have a couple of things that could happen. We could have multiple sites, and that's why it's 50 miles long. There could be things going on at several locations there, but what I see here is that I do see some information that points to a lot of the things in the follow-on session that were in the original one. So I'm thinking that the most interesting or the most unusual aspect is what we were drawn to when we did the session. And so I think we're starting to get to where we're getting some of the information. There's obviously an underground component that needs to be looked at. So I would say that would be the thing we would target for the next set of sessions, to see what is underground there. And that would help us a lot.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
If you think about it, if you got 50 miles long, the longest thing that you would typically need is an airstrip, and probably for a reentry vehicle of terrestrial origin. So that's a possibility.
Yeah, but 50 miles?
No, you wouldn't need it that long for that. I'm just saying that in a 50-mile-wide stretch, you would have length enough for the longest run rate you would need, plus quite a few other things that might be there if you're doing excavation work. You know, you're going to need to bring in troops, you're going to need to bring in personnel, you're going to need to bring in construction equipment. There's quite a bit that you'd have to bring in. And a runway would also be something that would simply fit in there very, very easily. You only need a couple of miles for that, even on some of the fastest Blackbird-type vehicles. So those are some of the possibilities we would look at. Now, I didn't see any evidence of a strip, but it doesn't mean that it's not there. It just means that the most interesting aspect of this site was what we pulled up, which was the underground portion of this, and the domed whatever over above.
Is the dome above the opening to the underground structure? Is that what you're saying?
That's what we're thinking based on what we see. But we still need to do more follow-up sessions to narrow this down a little bit further so we can get into the meat of the data and get some more information on that. So I'm saying that there could be a lot more than one unique thing at this site.
Are you familiar with Lake Vostok in Antarctica?
I'm not as familiar with it as I really would like to be. I understand that that's quite the location for what we're talking about.
Yeah, well, of course, it was big news that a liquid lake was discovered 2 miles under the ice. But it is liquid. It's not frozen. It's 2 miles under the ice. At the north end of that lake, on the north shore of that lake, there is what they describe as a magnetic anomaly that's 65 miles by 45 miles. They very suddenly, JPL was going to do some testing of equipment that they had thought they might use on Mars, and very suddenly decided, nope, we don't need to do that. We're out of here. And all of the news about Lake Vostok and the anomaly vanished. I don't mean that it vanished. Current reporting vanished. The stuff that was reported you can still find on the Internet. But
as if some organization or entity decided that no one really needs to know what's down there.
Well, one could speculate that, yes. But it's not a speculation that the information flow stopped. And there was one little bit of information that was interesting, and that was that remains of an ancient village had been found. Some type of ancient structure, ancient village had been found under the ice there. And then that was it. We've heard no more. We do hear that they plan to drill, the Russians plan to drill into the lake. They're going to drill on in all the way into the cavity and try to get some samples of the water and so forth. Now, we hear about that, but we hear no more about this magnetic anomaly. And, 65 miles by 45 miles is big. It's bigger than what we're talking about in Greenland. But basically, you're talking about 50 miles in Greenland by, 12 miles, something like that. And, that also is big. But we haven't heard anything about Greenland being a magnetic anomaly. So, they may be completely dissimilar sites. However, the similarities are in the lack of information.
Well, what's interesting is that to analyze something like a magnetic anomaly, as you know, you would use a Gauss meter to take a look and see whether or not you have a pattern that you need. I'm currently working on developing something that might assist in these sort of adventures. Walter Bosley and I have spoken about it. And basically, you would take a Hall effect sensor, which is what they use in Gauss meters, and they make Gauss meters that have simply one sensor in them. So they'll work on one plane as you tilt the device. You can also develop and design one that does all three axes, so you get a three-dimensional view of whatever that field happens to be. And my thought is to get a couple of good sensors, Hall effect sensors, do a three-axis pattern, but then feed that in through the USB port into a laptop and get somebody pretty good with doing modeling software on Linux and have them design a program that would give you a three-dimensional representation of what those Hall effect sensors are pulling for the geomagnetics in the area on the screen of your laptop. So as you walk a ley line or a magnetic anomaly, you can see how big it is, what it looks like, and as you're moving across it, you can see the actual, as if you're going through a tunnel view, of what that anomaly looks like. So if you're traveling, let's say, a ley line, and you're walking down the middle of it, it should give you a pretty good representation of what that ley line looks like and what its boundaries are. And you could do the same thing with a magnetic anomaly like that. The question
they discovered that magnetic anomaly by what they were going to do is they flew over the lake with magnetic resonance imaging equipment, and they were looking for they were imaging to look for where's the best place to drill into this lake. And when they flew over that area on the north end of the lake, it sort of white screened on them, and their meters went, you know, pegged out, and they thought there was a problem with the equipment. So they landed the airplane, had technicians take a look at the equipment, and discovered that it was functioning properly. It just, whatever that was, pegged the equipment out. We have to take a break. We'll be back with more of Jeff Harvey and this weird thing in Greenland. We'll also open the telephone line for your calls at 1-800-289-1092. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artist from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back, and we are talking this evening with Jeff Harvey. The telephone line is open, 1-800-289-1092. Toll-free throughout North America, and that, of course, is the United States and Canada.
Now, if you're outside of that area, and we know we have a very large audience scattered all around the world, you can still participate, and we want you to participate in the discussion by sending me a flash message. Let me say this before we roll on. If you wait until the last 5 minutes of the show to send me a flash message, it is virtually certain that it will not get read on the show. Why? Because we don't have time left. So, and the same is true of calls, telephone calls within the last few minutes. Maybe we can take them, maybe we can't. So if you have a question or a comment, you need to not wait till the end of the show, all right? Let's get it in while the getting is good, all right?
Jeff, let's talk about Vostok a little bit more. I know you haven't done remote viewing on that, but let's talk about it for a little bit. Vostok is, of course, the location. It's called Lake Vostok because of the fact that the Russians have a base, a science base, located at that location, and it just happens that they discovered underneath their base is this lake. And so they named the lake Lake Vostok. Their station is called Vostok, and so now we have Lake Vostok. What, caller, if I've got you on hold, and if you will, just hang on, I'll get to you. But let me just ask you, just your general knowledge of electronics and magnetic things and ley lines and weird stuff. What do you think could cause a magnetic anomaly 65 miles by 45 miles and strong enough to peg the equipment on an overflying MRI machine?
Well, there's magnetic amplifiers are devices that not do what they say they'll do. That's one possibility. Another is perhaps there's a type of metal down there that was permeated or charged with a particular energy that is causing it. Sesheri has done some pretty groundbreaking work on this when he was doing his ley line maps. He's evidently mapped the entire globe. He's an incredibly gifted researcher when it comes to ley lines. And from some of the things that he taught me, basically what I see is that sometimes there are these magnetic anomalies that are underground, and what happens is you can tell where they are by the way the Earth has moved above them. Now, over the course of thousands of years, these forces beneath the Earth's surface cause the geography above to change. Right here in the area that I'm in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and we have a couple of really huge vortices that are intersections of ley lines, multiple ley lines, and what you'll see is that the Earth has moved around them. So it's either possible that there is some ancient technology down there, and that would be my first inference, is that the reason they built the base there in the first place is because they knew about it long before, and they were looking to see what they could glean from this. And I'm thinking that it's another one of those things where they may have found an ancient civilization's structures, and they're going down to find out why it's causing that. So a lot of these things, they'll go and they'll notice there's a problem at the area or an anomaly, and they'll go do the research, build their base, get to work, and then years later, when they've finally gotten down to some level where they've found something, that's when you first start hearing the leaks of information that come out. So my thoughts are it's either natural or it may be just an ancient civilization technology that they're looking to acquire.
All right, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show, if you will. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Michelle from Quebec.
Yes, Michelle.
Good evening, Kevin.
Good evening.
Hi, Michelle.
I hope you guys are both feeling fine.
Yes. Do you have a question or comment, Michelle?
Yeah, well, comment more, I guess it would be, Kevin. I think it's an ancient cooling system. If there's a underground basis and we see UFOs that's been reported a mile and a half long, that would take a pretty big underground facility, and if it's down deep enough, the warmth of near a volcano or something, they'll need a very big cooling system. 50 miles, though, is an awful long piece of machinery, but if it's run by alien technology, it could screw up everything in both places. I think the one in Iceland there, 50 miles long?
Yeah, in Greenland?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen the video?
Yeah, I watched the video, and I looked at it and watched it a couple times, and the only thing I could think of, it must be a cooling system or a energy system to take energy in for an underground facility. What else could it be at that size?
It is big. It is big. Michelle, thanks for the call.
You're welcome, Kevin.
All right, have a good evening. All right, folks, 1-800-289-1092, 1-800-289-1092 is the toll-free number. It is open, and we will take your questions or comments. Maybe you have some insight into what this is, based on some, hard evidence. Give us a call, 1-800-289-1092. Or you can send us a flash message if you're outside of North America. Send your flash message to flash@kevinsmithshow.com. It's just an email, but send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com. There was a movie that came out about Vostok, and I wish I could remember the name of it. It was not, in my opinion, a top-notch production, but it was interesting, and it was sci-fi. It was fiction, science fiction, but it had to do with, I think, Atlantis. I think that movie concluded that this anomaly was Atlantis and that it was warming up and rising up. And it was kind of an interesting movie. Let's go back to the phones. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Brent from Wyoming.
Yeah, Brent.
Jeff, I have a question for you. It's off topic, but it's a question nonetheless. In remote viewing, if I'm not mistaken, time is not a factor.
Well, it is a factor. However, time is not what most people think of it as. We think of forward and backwards in time. And the current thinking by the folks who do a lot of work in that area is that time, past, present, and future, is in the same spot. We just look at it differently.
All right. Now, here's my question. In remote viewing, can you remote view technology?
Absolutely.
Is there any possibility you and your group or any number of groups could remote view Nikola Tesla's free energy technology and reproduce it and give it to the people of planet Earth?
You know, that's a thought that a lot of people have come up with. About a year ago, we did a session for a zero-point energy device, and we got the idea because of Nikola Tesla. And it was interesting because it turned out that a Roden coil seems to be part of it. And if you go to Marco Roden's website, just key him in up there in a search engine, you'll find out he uses vortex-based math to design his. He gets more energy out than goes in, which most of the folks will poo-poo as not being possible, but it is. And the bottom line is that seemed to be part of it. What was really odd was that it turned out that quartz seemed to have something to do with it. And we haven't done the follow-on sessions because we're so busy doing some other things and projects, we haven't gotten back to it. But yes, it's possible. And if that's something you're really interested in, you should consider learning remote viewing. Anyone can do it. And Ed Dames puts out a video series and CDs that will teach you. I went through his course, and I recently viewed his older courses, which seemed to do a much better job on the Stage 1 session. So that's something that I would encourage you to take a look at.
Okay, thank you. I will.
Thank you for the call, Brent. 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. Or you can, if you're outside of North America, send me a flash message. If you can't remember the flash message address, just go to my website, scroll down, and you'll see a link that says send me a flash message, all right? All right, let's go back to the phones. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Chris from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yes, Chris.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I just had a quick question, and then I'll listen off the air for the answer.
All right.
You would think that in the age of disinformation that we have been so gloriously brought up in, that they would be able to pretty much, like, mask the image altogether and not have any kind of anything showing via Google Earth or anything. Do you think there's any particular reason why there's even anything there for us to look at?
Boy, you make such a great point. One of the things that we were talking about, Kevin and I, was that the whole thing could be simply a disinformation issue where there's somewhere else on that continent or that that country that they're looking for something else to be done, but they're masking that area to draw everybody's attention away from it. If you look on Google Earth, there's another little black patch just below that one. And so you never know what they're attempting to do, but the fact that we did get some information that points to something underground, that tells me that there is something going on there. So whether or not it's a disinformation piece, there's definitely something there. And being how stark that whole area is out there, it's certainly worth taking a look at. But I agree with you. That's a possibility.
All right. Let's go back to the phone lines. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob.
Yes, Bob. Where are you calling from?
California.
All right. California. That's the first one tonight. Go ahead.
I had two questions. The first one I was wondering was, how is your health, Kevin? Because I was trying to imagine the world without your show, and I was like, that just sucks.
Well, thank you, and thank you for being concerned. As far as I know, my health is very good now. It would be a surprise to me to find out otherwise, so I think I'm in good shape right now.
And, you know, there's a way of finding out, too. They have a new technology out called bioacoustics where they'll read your voice patterns and look at the frequencies to identify any disease markers and be able to tell you exactly where you're efficient or deficient. So there are ways of looking at that now.
You know, all it would tell me, I'm sure, is that I'm getting old. So, what, Bob, what's your second question?
Like with remote viewing, can you see things that normal people usually can't see? And if so, how is that not cheating if it's not used for complete innocent terms? Okay, thank you.
All right.
All right, thanks, Bob. Yes, you can. And as far as I'm concerned, anything that will allow me to cheat so that I can get the truth about something is not cheating. To me, I don't really like secrets. I think they've got little place on the planet. The fewer of them that we have, the more likely we are to behave as better people.
Okay, fair enough. 1-800-289-1092, 1-800-289-1092, toll-free throughout North America, and we also have the flash messages open for those who are outside of North America. There's cheating, and then there's cheating. You know, I have received emails from people, and we've had callers with other guests talking about using remote viewing to win the lottery. That might be cheating. I don't know. I'm not sure how that works. But anyway, if we use remote viewing to find out, for instance, we're curious about our moon. What's there? What, you know, I cannot get in a spaceship and go to the moon. Even if we had spaceships making routine trips to the moon, I can't afford the ticket. I can't go to the moon. Would it be cheating for me to do remote viewing and take a look? Well, I don't think that's cheating any more than getting on the spaceship and going physically and taking a look.
I've got a couple of comments on that. As far as that goes, I agree with you 100%. As far as the lottery goes, there's an old saying that the lottery is nothing more than a task or a tax on the mathematically challenged. And the fact that they constantly are touting that it helps older folks in the country, I haven't seen a lot of evidence to that effect. So if remote viewing can win the lottery for you, I say go for it. I did purchase the remote viewing the lottery DVD. I just haven't used it yet. So I'm looking forward to doing that this year.
Well, if everyone in America purchases that, and if everyone in America then does remote viewing to win the lottery, everybody's going to get about 10 cents.
That's pretty much how that's going to work, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the millions of dollars that people win are because the odds are so astronomically against you. And people keep losing. Nobody wins, and that just rolls over into the next week.
That's why they call it a tax on the mathematically challenged.
Yeah, yeah. But I have to say, if I happen to win the lottery, I won't turn it down.
No.
I would accept it. I would just buy me a big sign that says mathematically challenged, but laughing all the way to the bank.
Absolutely. Hey, by the way, on the Vostok, there's another consideration. It's entirely possible that an extremely dense metal asteroid may have struck and created Lake Vostok, and it could be stuck down there, whatever's left of it, at the far end of it, and causing that magnetic anomaly.
Well, see, now that is an idea that I talked about when I've done several shows about Lake Vostok, and I've talked about that if you had a large meteor or an asteroid, a large one, that did not disintegrate in the atmosphere, and I mean large, a planet killer, it could gouge out Lake Vostok and come to rest where it came to rest, which happens to be at the north end of that gouge. The one thing that made me back off of that is that Lake Vostok has a ridge that goes across the lake. It bisects the lake. And so that you have one end where it's very, very deep, and then you have this ridge, and then it drops off into the northern end where it's very deep. And that doesn't sound like something that the asteroid would have been able to accomplish.
I see your point, and that's an incredible geology. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so, you know, I was favoring that theory until I read about the ridge, and it would have to be that for some reason, right there, instead of continuing to gouge, it bounced up and then hit the ground again. Let's go back to the phone line and caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Oh, this is Bob again. I just had one last question.
Yes.
How does remote viewing work? Thank you.
Well, remote viewing is nothing more than something everyone can do. It's based on the premise that every particle in the universe is connected to every other particle simultaneously. Your body's autonomic nervous system can reach out and connect with the ether, the matrix, the field, whatever you'd like to call it out there, which is what evidently the Akashic Record or the information pattern that's in the ether is. And all you do is you're basically saying, look, go out and get that data, and your mind literally will use the autonomic nervous system to reach out, get the information, bring it back into your body. It'll bubble up through your preconscious processing. It'll get locked into your long-term memory to take a look and see what matches that pattern. and you get bursts of information that you'll jot down on a paper while you're in the theta state. And what happens is you simply get bursts of words and shapes, and you jot them down as they come to you. And all you're doing is connecting your autonomic nervous system through your arm, through the pen, on the paper. It's nothing fancy. There's nothing magical about it. It's something every single person can do. It's just a matter of how good you're at it and how good your autonomic nervous system is in doing that.
We have a flash message that has come in, but let me, let me say to the caller that I just tried to bring up online and put on hold. I cut you off. I'm sorry. I really didn't mean to push that button. Call me again, please. 1-800-289-1092. We have a flash message that's come in that says one reason that they're not really wanting to try to hide it too much is the fact that there are so many jets that fly over that region. And speaking of jets, how about finding someone to fly over that area to take photos? That should about solve the mystery.
It would, unless there's a couple of intercept fighters waiting for you to pass through to escort you off the premise.
Yep, yep, that might happen. That's a possibility. We have, let's see, about 4 minutes here before break. So if we have a caller that wants to get in before the break, now's the time. 1-800-289-1092. I have a button that I can push that clears the lines, and it's right next to the button that brings you on the air. And I accidentally pushed that button and cleared the lines. So I apologize. It was not intentional, all right? I promise you. You know, the Greenland thing is mysterious indeed. As far as I'm concerned, it ranks right there with the mystery of Lake Vostok. Now, other people may see it differently, but to me, it's as big a mystery as the Lake Vostok thing. Now, one bit of information that I got, I call it information, it's a suggestion that it could be this, was that the ice is melting under at Greenland. It's melting much faster than they had thought it would, and this part is verified. What I'm about to say is verified. Scientists have discovered that it's melting because of magma under the surface, moving under the surface, and that it's heating things up and causing it to melt. But the bit of information was that some extraterrestrial folks have arrived at that area to try to help mitigate that problem. So we can discuss that in just a moment. Let me say, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and where are you calling from?
It's Kevin from Aransas Pass.
Are you the person that I hung up on?
No, sir.
Okay. Well, I just say again to whoever it was that I hung up on, I apologize. Kevin, go ahead with your question. We have a break coming up, so we may have to answer that after the break, but go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to know whatever happened to Debbie from Columbus. So I'll hang up and answer.
Yeah, I have no idea. We haven't heard from Debbie in a long time, so I have no idea. All right, now... what do you think about that theory? And we've got 1 minute now until break. What do you think about that theory that some extraterrestrial folks showed up to help mitigate that problem of the heat melting the ice?
Well, first of all, there's no reason not to believe that's a possibility, since we know for a fact that they have been visiting this little pile of rock here, third from the sun, for quite some time. So that's an entire possibility. The question is why is it that they're doing that? And hopefully it's for our benefit.
Well, I would think that if all that ice melts and all that fresh water dumps off into the ocean, that could create some real climate problems for us. So I would think if they could keep that from happening, it would be a help.
Yeah, I have a few questions regarding that that I'd like to throw out. I don't know if you have time, but one of them would be why are we not getting more publicity on it?
Yeah, let's deal with that after this break, and we'll be back, folks, in just a moment. 1-800-289-1092, toll-free. If you're in North America, anywhere in North America, or if you're outside of North America, send me a flash message. We'll be back after this.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
Welcome back. We're talking with Jeff Harvey. He is, among other things, a remote viewer, and he and his team have been looking at this strange thing that's shown up in Greenland. Apparently, a
real anomaly of some kind that's shown up in Greenland. And we have a link to the video where you can see what can be seen. That video was made from looking at Google Earth. So all you have to do is go over to kevinsmithshow.com and scroll down. You see a picture of Jeff Harvey, and right next to the picture is a link to that video, all right? So take a look at it. Now, Jeff, I don't really detect, I haven't detected in any of the calls tonight, a very strong sense of skepticism about remote viewing. But that is a factor that you have to deal with. People are skeptical about it. Some are. And even though it was something that the government developed and I guess you could say sort of perfected or tried to, it was an official program that the government was behind. There are people that are skeptical about it. Just in 10 or 15 seconds, how do you deal with that skepticism?
Pretty simple. The bottom line is if you hand them a DVD to take the first sessions and they do that DVD, I have yet to see anyone that doesn't come across after they've done that thinking that this is amazing. They literally can do exactly what we say they can do, and they see the facts in front of them that they produced. And there's no other way around it. It simply wipes away any skepticism.
All right, let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Darren from Michigan.
Yes, Darren.
How's it going, Kevin?
Outstanding.
Great. Hey, that's exactly what I'm calling for, is about remote viewing. I tried it just the other day, and I was in front of my computer, and I thought, well, I want to look this up. So I typed in remote viewing test on Google, and it brought up a page that you can test yourself with. And I've never tried this before, and I tried it, and it tells you everything that you're, what you're supposed to do, basically, to get started. And boy, was I ever blown away. I probably did about five of them, and they give you the example. Probably Jeff knows what I'm talking about. They give you, like, these letters or numbers that you have to look at and see what you pick up. And it took me probably about at least 5 minutes for each sequence. But this definitely does work, no doubt about it. I got, like, 3 out of 5 on my first try. And the first two, they're more sketchy, like I would see shapes and textures a little bit. And then on the third one, I actually saw the picture itself. And then the last two, I didn't really get anything on. I don't know why, but I just drew a blank. But I was blown away by the third one.
Let me ask a question. Prior to this, are you a person that you do you consider yourself to have psychic ability?
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. I just don't practice it that much, and I don't have anyone to teach me, really.
Okay. Any observations, Jeff?
Yeah, I know what he's talking about, but that's not really remote viewing. That's a totally different protocol that you are working with.
Okay.
Remote viewing is basically going into the theta state using pen and paper to use your autonomic nervous system to pull bursts of information in. And I'm not saying that what you were trying wasn't something that worked well for you. What I'm saying is that if you want to get consistent data and you want to be able to do this at a level that some of the best folks on the planet have been able to do it at, like Ingo Swann, consider taking one of the DVD courses to get yourself trained properly so that your structure is down and your protocol is working perfectly, because then if you think what you did before was interesting, you'd be amazed at what you'll be able to produce after going through the training on the DVDs.
Yeah, I'd like to study it further. This was more or less like 4 letters, and then you have to sort of image in your mind what the picture was. I take it this is like very basic remote viewing.
Well, I've taken the first lesson in Ed Dame's DVD series. I've done the first DVD. There is a similarity in what you're talking about, but it is quite different in that it goes way beyond that.
Okay.
Yeah, so get your hands on that DVD program, or there are others. But, yeah, it goes way beyond that. And if you were blown away by what you experienced...
Oh, I was very blown away.
I got to tell you, not too much really impresses Kevin Smith. But I got to tell you, that certainly did. And it's well worth doing. Darren, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
All right. I guess everyone can hear. I'm having a little bit of problem with my voice. And that's because we have 30-mile-an-hour winds out here today, and we're getting all that crud that flies in here out of California's sky. And we're getting, you know, pollen and stuff that I'm not used to. So we'll get through it, though. All right, 1-800-289-1092 is the number to call. It's toll-free. We'd love to hear from you if you have a question or a comment. Now, folks, we started out talking about this anomaly in Greenland, and I want to get back to that just a little bit. You talked about something that to me sounded like tunnels. But you said they're sort of, I can't remember the word you used, but
they appear to be enclosed.
Yeah, but the word that comes to my mind was that you were describing them as sort of an undulating type of pattern.
Correct.
What do you make of that?
Well, the diagrams that were drawn show they look like switchbacks, which, if you think about it, switchbacks are typically what are used to go vertically back and forth and straight down, and that's entirely possible that that's how they were constructed. I would love to see someone put together some ground-penetrating radar views of this, because I think that would be really telling on what we're dealing with here. But failing that, we'll simply do a few more follow-on sessions with the RV and see what we come up with. It would be interesting to see if the next time you have Ed Dame's team on, if his team would also do that and compare some of the results. It'd be fun to see how we do it. He's got quite a team there of folks that are extremely, extremely good.
Yeah, when you said switchbacks, before you even mentioned that, you know, switchbacks are used. And a switchback means that you go a short distance and you immediately switch and go back, but you're all the time going down.
Correct.
So I'm headed north and then I make a turn. I'm headed down, but in a northerly direction. I make a turn and go back the same direction I just came, but continuing downward. And then another switchback to head me to the north again. And so forth. And you do this. Mountain roads, if it's a very steep mountain, will have switchbacks. And so I think people are familiar with that. But the minute you said switchbacks, I immediately thought, well, that sounds like a mining operation.
That's somewhat what I'm thinking. Now, again, I need to do more follow-on sessions to get more data, but that's one of the possibilities I came up with. There may be a mining operation going on there. But let's say we have a magma situation that's causing the melting. This may be a method of releasing pressure from the magma chambers. Question is what are they doing with it? Now, that's just some speculation. It's got nothing to do with fact.
I can tell you that if it's a magma situation, as the scientists are saying, you would never catch me on a crew digging into that.
Not me either. thinking that's the quick way to go.
That is, not,
the easy way either.
Yeah, that is a quick way to fry.
Yeah.
You know, you get too close to that or happen to puncture into it, bye. It's over.
Even if you're close, you might release enough pressure that it creates a new fissure right up into your channel.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And it would all be over, but I guess they would say all be over but the shouting at that point.
Okay.
All right. Now, would magma be, can that be responsible for magnetic anomalies?
Well, a lot would depend on the makeup of the melted material in there. There are quite a few metals that could do something along those lines once they're in a molten form. I don't know enough about magma to know how that would be done, because I don't know the temperatures magma would be at and whether or not it's hot enough to bring the type of metals down in temperature that would need to be. I would think it's possible, but I honestly don't know the answer to that question. There's a couple of people that might be able to. I don't know. Are you familiar with Professor Jim McCanny?
No, but we'll have to get into that after this break. Folks, we'll be back on the other side of this break. We'll be in our final approach. And if you have a question or a comment, now is the time. 1-800-289-1092.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
are back, and we're talking with Jeff Harvey. If you have a question or comment, we're on final approach. We're in the last few minutes of the show. And if you've been trying to get in, you might want to hit redial, 1-800-289-1092.
Jeff, you were asking me if I was familiar with a Dr. McKinney or Professor McKinney.
Yes, he used to work at Cornell, and he has published several books on Earth changes and how the actual weather works from our solar system. And one of the interesting things is there's actually a proton sheet that runs through our galactic center and out past Pluto. And when an object like an asteroid comes through, basically what happens is it affects us with what they call action at a distance. It doesn't have to strike the Earth to create tremendous issues within our crust. And those things can actually cause these magma chambers to rupture, to create new ones, and to actually begin moving in ways they didn't before. And he might be a good guest for you. He's got quite a bit of information. I've read his books, and it's extremely good information. It's funny, too, because for years, the media and the academia would poo-poo his theories, when in fact, now, they're all agreeing that this is how it works.
So, if there was a star that exploded and disturbed that proton sheet, you're saying that the ripples of that hit us and can create issues for the structure of our planet.
That's correct. And the closer it comes, obviously, the more issues we'll have. And that may very well be why there are so many telescopes pointed towards the southern sky. The Vatican and others. I mean, the bottom line is they're looking for something to come because I think they already know it's out there, and I think they know when it's coming. It's just a matter of, you know, when it does. The question is will they tell the populace? And I honestly don't believe they will.
Well, if it gets close enough without killing us, that if it's close enough that it shows up visibly in our sky, it'll be kind of hard to deny it or explain it away. They might tell us, like that guy from the Air Force did about the Stephenville UFO sighting, that that's just an anomaly. It's just an illusion created by two commercial aircraft.
Well, I love the disinformation stories that are out there. One only has to get Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project DVDs with the literally dozens and dozens of top-ranking officials that have disclosed what they've seen in the UFOs to realize that we've got an issue out there.
And this is a little bit off-topic. But maybe you've done some remote viewing on this. Have you done remote viewing that at any time that dealt with the UFO extraterrestrial issue?
Somewhat. I've only just begun doing some of that. And I had a conversation with Ed Dames the other day because, as you know, there was an implant in my leg. And he and I were talking about what I'm going to be doing about that. And for me, I want answers. I'm just one of these guys. I don't care what the truth is. I just want to know what the truth is. So I'm going to be doing more RVing of those things. And Ed gave me some good ideas on how to approach that. But I think we have a couple of more conversations because he has quite a bit of knowledge in that area. In fact, I believe he even put out a DVD on it.
I'm not sure that it was Ed Dames, but I think it was Ed Dames that said that they didn't want to do any remote viewing of UFOs any longer because the one session produced images that were very frightening.
Oh, I doubt you'd find that would frighten Ed.
Yeah.
He's typically a military mind, similar to the way I look at things. We just want to know what the truth is. I think fear is one of those things where you really need to face your fears. I'm a proponent that whenever you have an issue that frightens you, face it. It makes you a stronger man, a better man, and the bottom line is you get more truth. So I think that whoever that was probably just simply hadn't come to grips with some of their fears yet, because in RV, you're detached enough that it shouldn't be something that's physically frightening, even though you might get an aesthetic impact marker that says frightened or fearful. Not everyone actually feels those when they're in a session. Most people do not.
One of the things about the Greenland anomaly that fascinates me is the possibility, two possibilities. One, that it may have some extraterrestrial component, as I was told by someone who called me. I told you about that in a private conversation. And the other is the possibility there may be something very, very ancient involved. Now, ancient stuff just fascinates me. And, I was looking at the internet today and saw some fossilized footprints from millions of years ago that should not be. Every form, every explanation of evolution, whether it's Darwin's theory or others, says that there should have been no humans around at that time, and yet those footprints, they are very human. I mean, they look just like your footprint, my footprint, and they're not supposed to be there.
I found that most of the information we were given when we were in school that has to do with, the pre-5,000 years age of our planet, I think most of it's pretty much bunk and disinformation. And so I have to agree with you. I think that if you look at what they're teaching in schools or what they taught us when we were younger, it doesn't match that, which tells me that somebody had an agenda when they were teaching us. What I find interesting is when we were looking at Greenland last week, prior to the last show you and I did, I just pulled those sessions back out, and there is an extraterrestrial component into it. And what's really interesting is the looping energy and things that we saw in these sessions today match some of the information we got from last week. And it appears that there is a mountain structure with an opening in it. And there are several of them in some of the sessions. So there are also some gouged fissures there that came up in those sessions. So it looks like there's quite a bit of corroborating evidence through the ones from last week as well as this week.
So what do you think? A UFO on the ground there?
That's one of the possibilities. One of the RVers actually drew one that was in the session. And one other actually had one that looked like that with some looping energy, and it was pretty high-powered energy that came up, and it was a winding pattern that was connected. So there is corroborating evidence for that. Now, whether or not that's still at the site, will always be at the site, or what's changed, we don't know. That's something we need to look at a little further.
Yeah, the call that I got said that that there is a huge UFO spacecraft that is there, that it is, although at ground level, not on the ground, it's floating above the ground, and that they are doing things to mitigate or try to mitigate the heat from this magma, to try and stop the rapid melting of the ice there in Greenland. All right, we have reached the end of the show, and I wish we had more time. We simply don't. That happens to us every night. I wish we could continue. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been fascinating, hasn't it? And we want to thank Jeff for being with us. Jeff, stay on the phone with me. And folks, my friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too.
You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. I'll be back tomorrow night. My guest will be Walter Bosley. You be here too, all right? Until then, so long, everybody.